Hello, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another. I'm your host, Lindsay, and I'm so happy that you are here with me today. All Have Another is a show where I bring on people who inspire, encourage, and motivate, and make you laugh a little bit, too. Sometimes we go deep. Sometimes we keep it light. It's usually a mix of the two, and I'm having a lot of fun with this show. I started dreaming of starting my own podcast last fall, when I would be on lots of stroller runs listening to podcasts and podcasts that I love. But I started coming up with this idea in my head of what exactly I wanted to listen to. And I couldn't find that. I found variations and I found different things that filled different needs, but I couldn't find exactly what I wanted. So I just decided, what the heck, I'm going to create the show on my own. And so in January, I started taking the time to research and figure out how the heck you create a podcast. And here we are today. This is week 6 and it's episode 11. And I just want to say thank you so much to everybody who has listened. I know a lot of you have jumped on right from the start and you guys have been encouraging me. And I just, every tweet, every Facebook message, everything I see, I appreciate and it makes me so happy. And I really hope you guys are enjoying it. We have, because of you, we've climbed up to the new and noteworthy section of iTunes, which is a really great place to be visibility-wise, so other people who haven't heard of the show can find it. So thank you. That's thanks to all of your ratings and reviews and all of your shares on social media. So that's how people find us. Thank you so much. Okay, so today we are talking with Sarah Hall for episode 11. I emailed Sarah a couple of weeks ago and asked her if she wanted to come on the show, and she was super prompt and kind with her response and agreed to come on. So I'm so excited to have her on the show today. So Sarah is a professional runner for ASICS, and she's an American distance runner. She was an All-American at Stanford University. She was the 2012 U.S. National Cross Country Champion. She was a gold medalist at the Pan American Games in the steeplechase, and she's represented the U.S. at 3 World Indoor Track and Field Championships and a World Cross Country Championship. The girl can run fast. In this episode, we talk about her recent success in the marathon and what's next for her in her running career. We also talk about her becoming a new mom this past year. Her and her husband, Ryan, adopted 4 daughters from Ethiopia, and I love talking about that kind of stuff, and we really get into that. We also talk about their amazing foundation, the Hall Steps Foundation, and the work that they're doing, as well as some other fun stuff like their famous muscle milk pancakes. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Sarah, for coming on. Here we go. Okay, so everybody, we're talking with Sarah Hall, and I'm very excited about this interview. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay.
So I want to talk to you. I've been very intrigued by your journey, specifically in the past year when you guys adopted your 4 girls, and I want to get to that. But first, can you kind of just give the rundown of your journey and running and growing up and all that?
Sure. Well, I started running when I was 13, and I grew up in Santa Rosa in Northern California, kind of in the wine country near Sonoma. And just I grew up playing soccer since I was 5 and knew I kind of had speed and endurance from that, but decided to go out for cross country the summer before my 7th grade year. And unlike most 7th graders, decided to like train for it. And I just started running in the beautiful trails. I lived across the street from this big state park. And so I just kind of fell in love with exploring in the trails and pushing myself each day, and then won my first race in kind of a sprint finish in 7th grade. And so after that, I was like hooked on both kind of the running in nature part of running as well as kind of the competitive part of it. And ever since then, I guess that was 20 years ago, I've been doing it. And now it's been 11 years professionally, which I would have never thought I'd be doing it this long.
So like, you mean when other kids were just like running with the team and whatnot, you were actually going out and doing workouts and training on your own as well?
Yeah, I've always been a pretty driven personality. So I would, like, even in junior high, I would like run to practice, do the practice, try to like outdo everyone in practice, and then like run home and then go to soccer. And, you know, so I've just always been a little bit of an overachiever that way.
Yeah. So then you, I looked up, you ran, did you win state all 4 years in cross country?
I did, yeah. So yeah, that was difficult because my senior year, actually, I started the year pretty rough. I went on a mission trip to Holland that summer and didn't quite get in the training I needed. But it kind of came together in the last minute, and that was a big goal I had, to become the first person to do that. So I'm thankful I could pull it off.
That's crazy. So when you were, like, when you're training in high school at that level, I mean, how many miles a week do you think you were running?
Yeah, so my coach, before my freshman year, he gave all of us like a beginning, intermediate, and advanced kind of just vague workout plan of miles. And so, of course, I was like, well, I want to be good. I'm going to do the advanced. And it had me doing like 15-mile long runs on the weekends, which took me like 2 hours and 15 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
So just in these single track trails in the hills. And so I just came to started my freshman year with this massive base from the summer, and ended up winning state and qualifying for the Foot Locker Nationals, which was kind of a surprise. Like, I didn't expect to, I didn't even know what Foot Locker was. Like, it all kind of just happened. And then to win the mile and 2 mile on the track was definitely like kind of hard in a way, because it's like, well, where do you go from here? You kind of did everything in your first year. So I kind of had to deal with pressure and stuff later on in high school. But yeah, it was fun.
That is an insane amount of miles. I mean, I'm just thinking, like, as a high schooler, I ran cross country, not crazy competitive like you, but I just can't imagine running, doing a 15-mile long run in high school.
Yeah, I think just because of where I grew up, it was so beautiful that I would try to, like, get lost and find my way home. That was just, like, fun for me. And but yeah, you know, it was just one of those things I feel like God just gave me a passion for. It wasn't like my parents were pushing me or, you know, like, it was like I just loved it. And so it was a great fit.
That's awesome. So then you went and you ran at Stanford.
Yeah.
And that's where you met your husband, Ryan.
Yeah, we met a little bit from high school, but so we kind of knew each other going in. But yeah, started dating our first week of freshman year there.
And never looked back.
Yeah, it was pretty linear. We got engaged right after senior year, after graduation, and then married a few months later. And then we both decided to do the pro running thing together. We were both actually planning to come back for a fifth year at Stanford, but just kind of how things worked out, we ended up going pro and starting this professional running journey.
So then you guys have been married, what, like 9 years?
It'll be 11 years in September.
Oh, so you got to celebrate your... Did you guys do anything special for 10 years?
Yeah, you know, we were in Ethiopia
okay.
having just adopted our girls a few weeks before. So
we
did end up going out that night because my parents were there with us. But really, they were kind of our focus at the time. And honestly, we've spent so much time together the last 10 years that it never really feels like we're... I don't know. That's a big priority.
Yeah. I know. I never understand couples that get each other like all these crazy anniversary gifts. I'm like, I just want to go to dinner and
yeah,
we're together every day.
Exactly.
So then you have had a really successful track and field career. Would you say steeplechase is like, was that like your thing for a while?
Well, I started out, like in college, I ran mostly the 1500 and 5000. And my favorite was kind of the 3,000 indoors, and it was kind of a big jump from 15 to 5,000 outdoors. They didn't have the 3,000, and so then as a pro, like, I still loved the 3,000 indoors, but then, you know, was doing the 5,000. I wouldn't say as successful as I would have liked. So in the 04 trials, I did the 5,000. In the 08 trials, I did the 1,500, and in the 2012 trials, I did the steeple. So I kind of tried each of those at different periods, and but I would say my favorite was the 3K indoors.
Okay, and then so you're doing the Olympic trials this summer, aren't you?
I hope to. I actually am not qualified yet because my focus has been the marathon this year. So I'm transitioning to the track now and hoping I can get a qualifier in the next few months.
What will you try for that in the 10K?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of seeing, you know, I just started workouts because London was less than a month ago.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just hop in some races and see like how they go and go from there.
So, okay. So you ran the trials. And you had you I read your blog post all about it and the race, how it didn't turn out how you like expected, but it was special having your girls there and everything. So you ended up dropping at what, fifth mile 15?
I think it was between 17 and 18 somewhere.
Were you just kind of like, this isn't working, or what?
Well, I've never dropped out of a race before, so that never really crossed my mind. But I was getting pretty severe muscle cramps, and I got similar cramps in my debut marathon in LA when it was also really hot. But these ones were actually like stopping me from running, like jolting me into kind of stopping. And so at that point, I was like, I don't like this is going to take me forever to like finish this race. And so, I was thinking of like, I'm in really great shape right now. I don't want to like waste it on a suffering through this last half of the race. So I'm actually really thankful. I never really wanted to drop out of a race before. I thought hopefully I would never have to, but I'm thankful in hindsight that I did.
Well, yeah, and when it's your job, you're probably like, I have, if I go the full 26 miles, like, what's that recovery going to look like? And then when can I race another marathon?
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely like an injury risk thing for sure.
So then, and so I read your post about that, and you said that you were kind of, because Ryan's coaching you now, right?
Yeah, Ryan was coaching me when I was doing marathon training. Now that I've transitioned to track, I'm working closer with Steve Magnus, who's been involved the last 4 years in my training.
So, because you kind of said in your blog post that you made the decision individually from him making the decision that you should go on and go ahead and do London, and that's how you knew it wasn't like an emotional decision or whatever.
Yeah, we both kind of felt like that was a good plan. Like my training had gone really, really well going into the trials, and I really felt like it was just kind of circumstances of that day that affected me. And so I really wanted to just run another marathon, and for the joy of it, you spend like this long build up getting ready for this one race, and unfortunately, it's not like track where you can just go out the next weekend and try again. But I just really wanted to like do another one for the joy of kind of doing it. And London was always a great magical place for him, and consistently more moderate weather. And so it seemed like a good fit.
So, and but at the trials, your girls were there. And was that the first time they'd ever been at one of your, big races or what?
Yeah, they had gotten to come to, I guess, just one other, this kind of low key track 10K I did in Sacramento. But that was kind of the first race, big race that they'd been at, and that was a really fun experience seeing them out on the course. I didn't expect to get so emotional seeing them out there, but just seeing how excited they were out there, and they had signs and matching shirts, and it was really special. And it was hard, being, I would say, one of the biggest disappointments of my career to be one of like the only races they've seen. Was definitely like, you're like, oh, of all the races for you to come to, but I think just having, I feel like we came together as a family in a deeper way as a result of that race, because like just being so vulnerable with them and having invited them into the process of training and kind of filling them in on like what a big deal it was, and even emotionally sharing with them like what I was going through, just seeing them really embrace me, and I felt like we really came together, and it was really special.
I love that you said that you like you taught that like you use it as a lesson to teach them that failure doesn't discourage them from believing again and trying again or whatever. And you kind of like talked to them about it once you got home, and that was really sweet.
I really tried to kind of use the running continually as like a just being able to lead by example, because they're doing similar things. Like they have to be brave every day when they're showing up at middle school, which is hard enough being in middle school, but let alone like looking different from everyone, speaking a different language, like being new to a school, all of that. Like, I'm trying to like encourage them that like I know what, actually what you're going through is a lot harder, but just what it's like to like take risks, to be brave, to keep putting yourself out there, to and even when you experience disappointment and failure, to like keep trying, like not to let it discourage you. And so yeah, I think that they're picking that up, hopefully.
So you got okay, so you guys adopted four girls from Ethiopia. Was that like last October?
We decided to adopt them earlier in the year, and then the process just takes a long time, and we actually brought them to the US, I think it was October 2nd.
Okay. So have you always had the desire to adopt?
I grew up with a lot of adopted cousins and told my mom when I was like really young, like, I want to adopt, and would draw myself with adopted kids and stuff,
Aww.
pictures. So it was kind of always on my radar, and I guess I shared it with Ryan on our first date. I don't really remember that, but it was new to him. Like he didn't really had ever thought about that. But yeah, as we kind of got along, I wasn't quite ready to start a family a few years ago. I was really enjoying like living like a traveling gypsy and running all over the world and training wherever we wanted. We could just pick up and leave. And but he was really feeling like I'm ready for family. You know, we've been married 8 years now, and so. When we decided to adopt from Ethiopia, we were like, well, let's start the paperwork now because it's a long process. And so I was like, okay, well, let's get going and hopefully my heart will come around it by the time it's time.
You knew you wanted to do it, you just were like, maybe not right this second.
Yeah, I think it's when it's adoption too, you're like, there's no real rush, you know, it's not like your biological clock is ticking or something. You're like, we can look, what's the rush? We can do this whenever kind of thing. And but we were also at very different points in our career. Like I would say he was kind of struggling and discouraged, and I was really enjoying it probably the most I ever had. So but yeah, I think that in the end, like I'm really thankful, obviously, that we decided to, knowing our girls, you can't imagine life any
Oh
different.
gosh, yeah. So did you, I mean, were you, when you guys went into the process though, were you thinking we want to adopt siblings or we want to adopt four children at once or what?
No, you know, I don't think anyone really says, like, I'd like to adopt some teenagers, you know, like that sounds good. Like I think we were thinking like an infant because it was our first child and we want to experience kind of all the life stages. But really, like the more we got into the process, like we realized that's not really where the need is. And actually, there's some kind of unethical stuff that can like enter into the process because most people are only willing to adopt young children. And so some of that I didn't feel very good about, as well as like just spending time with older kids in the orphanage and seeing like, oh my gosh, I would take any of these kids. And really, like, that's where the need is. Like, orphanages are full of older children needing homes. And so yeah, it was really kind of God opening our hearts to it looking different than we expected. And of course, we had to like count the cost when we were deciding to do that. And I spoke to a lot of parents that have adopted older children, specifically from Ethiopia. And, you know, like these children remember, I mean, all adopted children have gone through trauma at some point. Like they know when they've been separated from their parents, and that's never, you know, what should happen. But I think especially when they're older and they really remember a lot of it and they've been through a lot, that can be pretty traumatic and pretty hard to adjust. So yeah, I think we really had to be like, okay, like if we say yes to this, this could mean saying no to quite a bit. Like both of us may not be able to keep running at all. Like our life could totally change. And yeah, it was definitely something we had to like pray a lot about. But fortunately, thus far, our girls have really adjusted really beautifully.
Do you notice the difference between the younger girls and the older girls, just as far as like adjusting being here? I mean, with the language barrier and everything, are they learning English easily? Are the younger ones learning it easier, or are they adjusting better?
Yeah, you're at a big advantage if you come over before puberty, just with language acquisition. Is that puberty is kind of a critical period. So, yeah, I mean, I would say like our younger children now, they speak English easier than their native language in just 6 months, you know, versus that's definitely not true of our older ones. And but actually, it's been, you know, I was most worried about communicating with them, and so we really tried to learn their language. And which I'm thankful for, we kind of met them halfway in that. But really, it hasn't been a problem. And I've been amazed even by our older girls how quickly they're picking it up.
So do you speak any? Like, do you speak their native language? What is their native language?
It's called Amharic. And yeah, we do. It's difficult. It's a lot like Arabic and has a whole different alphabet. And it's a difficult language to learn. So, we were working pretty hard to learn it while we were in process with them, just because we wanted to talk to our kids.
Yeah, but, of course.
But now it's getting a little rusty now that we've been over here.
So, what did you read any? I'm reading the book Orphanology. Have you heard of that?
I have. I would like to read it.
It's real. I read it before, like 3 years ago, and now I'm rereading it. I was, because I have it on my Kindle, and I was like on a flight home, and I finished the book I had been reading. I didn't have a new one, so I was like, I'll just reread this. And it, reading it just like pulls at my heart so much. Like, this is something we're called to do. And I just actually interviewed another gal, Jamie Ivy, who is, she has a podcast called The Happy Hour.
Oh.
And you would probably really like it. But she has three children through adoption. And I was just kind of telling her, like, I've always felt pulled to do it, but I'm a little bit terrified at the same time.
Yeah.
And kind of to what you were saying, like, especially if you adopted four girls at once, like, you know, what do you have to prioritize in your life then? Like, what you said, one of you has to stop running so much or whatever. It's like almost a selfish thing. Like, what am I ready to give up, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think you do have to count the cost. I mean, I think it's like a ministry that you're called to, but I would say, like, yeah, now, like, it's funny how I thought my life would change and how little it has in some ways. Like, I feel like I'm still able to train really effectively, and which I don't think is the norm, actually. Like, I think you have to definitely be willing to sacrifice. And who knows what's ahead of us as a family, you know? But but thus far, I'm really thankful that God's kind of given us all the grace to adjust. And yeah, it's been really amazing.
So what does your day-to-day look like then, now that you have the girls home?
Well, I think one benefit is that they're all in school. And so even Lily, she's five, so she's in pre-K most of the day. So, yeah, it's kind of getting up, and I've had to get on a little bit of an earlier schedule because they're getting to school. So getting them off to school and then training. And I try to get in most of my training while they're away so that I can kind of be really present when they're home. And then right now we have the older two in track practice. So actually today is their meet day. So I'll be one of the high jump officials, which I actually have no idea what I'm doing for that. I'm probably going to Google after this how to officiate the high jump. Things like this, as a parent, it's like I'm helping them with shot put. And I'm like,
I saw that picture on Instagram. You posted it somewhere.
So, yeah, it's starting to get a little busier where now it's like, and then after the track meet, Jasmine's going to dance practice. And, you know, you're like, we tried to really keep our first 6 months as a family, like, not doing a lot of activities, like staying at home together and playing games. But now we're starting to, like, get them involved in more stuff. And Ryan and I definitely have to be more strategic with, like, who's driving who and how to get in my training. But they'll be out of school actually in the end of this month, and then that'll be good timing before the Olympic trials to kind of be able to just be on a better schedule together.
Yeah. So since Ryan's not competitively running, does he kind of take on more of like a stay-at-home dad role, or is he doing other things?
A little bit. I mean, he's pretty busy because he's at my training. So, I mean, he's out there just as long as I am,
okay.
As well as he's getting really into like bodybuilding right now. So he's like lifting weights 2 hours a day. And then
I meant to ask you about that, because I told my sister I was interviewing you, and she was like, you have to ask her about that muscle picture of Ryan that's going around the internet. Is he really like, is he doing CrossFit or what?
Yeah, no, Ryan's very extreme. So whatever he's doing, he's like really doing this. And so running, like after he decided to step away from that, it was like straight into like, all right, I want to see how strong I can get. I'm tired of being a weak little runner.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, he like is buying Arnold Schwarzenegger's books and like has his own plan. And so,
that's
so
awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty into that. So we both kind of stay pretty busy just trying to keep up on doctor's appointments and, you know, everything that comes with our own lives and the four kids. And so it's definitely a team effort. But I feel like I've had to always be pretty good at time management. So I'm pretty good at being busy and handling it all, not getting stressed out. So
do you, I also saw you post that something, like there was a picture of you guys and you said something about how maybe your hopes of, now that he's retired, like being your training partner will come true. Do you love it when he does like your workouts with you?
Yeah, I would love if he did more running, but he's, you know, he doesn't really have a desire to do the hard running right now. So he's on the bike mostly. But it's not as nice as having someone on the track like pacing you or something. I'm jealous of those women runners that have their husbands doing that.
I run for hobby level, but my husband does that for me. Like if I'm running a marathon, he'll, and I'm like, I need to do like 10 marathon pace miles. He just runs them with me, and then he'll usually make me run one extra, you know? So it's nice that he's just that much faster than me that I can use him for that.
Totally. That is really nice. So who knows? Maybe he'll get the itch after this weight training phase ends.
So you guys are obviously really open about your faith, and I wanted to talk to you about that because I want to know, well, first of all, how it affects specific decisions you make in your career, but do you ever feel like people are judging you for that or anything, or you do know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is, as a public figure, like, it's hard sometimes to be really forthright with things that are polarizing, like faith, but I feel like, to be honest, you really do a disservice to people if you aren't fully yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, I think what the world really wants to see are people that are, like, really authentic, you know, and just being really you. And that's a big part of who I am. And so I really enjoy seeing people that aren't afraid to, like, you know, whether I agree with necessarily who they are or not, like, just aren't afraid to just be themselves in the public eye. And so I think that's what it's really been about for us, is like trying not to like dumb down who we are, just to be authentic. Mm-hmm. and realizing not everyone's going to understand that or agree with it, but hopefully we're doing it in a way that isn't I don't know, judgmental or or just like, this is who I am. So
yeah, this is the way I choose to live my life, this is what I believe. I just like, I think about, and not putting you in this category at all, but like I think about like Tim Tebow, you know what I mean? And how when he got really big, I felt like people almost made fun of him for it. And I'm like, we're all adults here. And he might have received some backlash for sharing his faith, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think in our culture right now, it does feel a little bit like anything's permissible except Christianity. Uh-huh. And so I think we realize that. And honestly, like, you just have to get to the point where, like, just you don't really care what other people think of you, and that's something, even aside from that, like being an athlete, like you really have to like kind of isolate yourself from that, because if you start to get wrapped up in people's expectations of you, or you know, you start to fear failure, and what is, you know, your pride of like, oh, if I fail in this race, like, and I found for myself, like, it makes it harder to take risks and kind of put yourself out there if you're constantly worried about that. So I really had to kind of deal with that at a young age, like being in the public spotlight. And I'm thankful that God's really dealt with that with me, where I know now, like, you know, God, I'm doing this unto you alone. Like, I know that I'm not afraid to fail. Like, if I, like, right, even now, like, I think about going out and doing a steeplechase after doing marathon training or something, and I'm like, wow, but really, like, what do I have to lose? Like, my pride and maybe drowning in the water pit. But, like, really, like, once you kind of get free from that fear, like, it actually allows you to, like, make big breakthroughs, because you're able to, like, take those risks.
So do you think about that when you're racing? Like, when you're racing, you're thinking, like, I don't need to be fearful because I have faith. I mean, is that going through your head while you're racing?
Well, I try to just, like, get filled up with God's love before races, because his love drives out fear. And so when you kind of just get secure in your identity, like, who I am, like, God, who do you say that I am? Like, you love, like, there's nothing you can do to love me any more, any less, like, no matter how I perform, you know, like, you just get kind of so focused on that you're like, okay, like, this race isn't going to dictate my identity at all. You know, it's not going to change anything. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I'm free to go out and, like, let's, you know, it's like making a sandcastle or something. Like, let's make the sandcastle and it's going to get knocked down and no one's going to care about it like tomorrow or, you know, a week from now. But it's like, let's just like do this together and see what happens. And I don't know, I guess it's just having a little more like childlikeness about it than mm-hmm. kind of taking yourself too seriously.
Do you listen to music or like read any books or the Bible or anything like before you compete to kind of get you revved up?
Yeah, I like to listen to worship music. Our church, Bethel Church here in Reading, has pretty incredible worship music.
Is that like the Bethel? Like,
yeah,
I listen to them on Pandora all the time. Is that what it is?
Yeah, they're pretty incredible.
It's a huge church.
It's pretty big. Yeah, it has a pretty massive worldwide following and about 4,000 people that come from all over the world to do the school and ministry here. So that's really why we're in Reading is for the church.
So
I like to just kind of stay in that spiritual space of worshiping God and like doing my race unto him.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Have you always gone to like a bigger church, like a big mega church like that?
No. And this one isn't, I wouldn't say it's like a mega church in size here. It's more just has a lot of, it kind of streams things, a lot of followers worldwide kind of follow it. But yeah, I grew up in a pretty kind of conservative, non-denominational church. And it was really living in Mammoth Lakes after college that this little church in this mountain town, I started to discover like there's a lot more to life in the spirit than I really knew. Like God was like a lot more real in life and the Holy Spirit was a lot more real than I had really been taught. And just started having some really cool experiences of injuries getting completely healed by prayer and just people like hearing from God and speaking those words that were kind of right on in our lives and things that like just we hadn't really experienced. And so it kind of led us on this journey of like, wow, like how much more can God move through us like in this world? It's not just about like faith, but about like him wanting to like actually like live inside us and do things through us. And so that kind of is a journey that we've been on and kind of has led us here.
So was Ryan already, were you guys were independent, separate from each other. You guys were already Christians.
Yeah, we had pretty similar upbringing, like really solid Christian homes and backgrounds. But yeah, this is kind of a newer journey that it was kind of new to both of us that we discovered together.
This might be a silly question, but do you think that your faith has a lot to do with why you decided to adopt your girls?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's, you know, the Bible talks a lot about caring for the poor and caring for orphans and widows. And I think just the more that you are filled with God's love, you naturally like want to do things that are on his heart too. And so I think that compassion he's kind of always put in me. And just going on missions trips in developing countries throughout my life, like my heart's just broken for people living in extreme poverty. And so that's why we started the Hall Steps Foundation, our charity, and are doing work specifically a lot in East Africa. And I think I've always wanted to live in a developing country and do that hands-on. And I still plan to, like, after running. So adopting girls from an impoverished country is kind of part of that. And I think I think like you see God's redemption through adoption, like how he adopts us as his kids, like, and we become his family. And you kind of see the gospel played out in our adoption too. And so, yeah, it's, I think, part of it.
That's awesome. So I actually have on here on my notes that I want to talk to you about is the Steps Foundation. So what can you tell everybody what you guys do?
Yeah, we started the Hall Steps Foundation in 2009 after going to Zambia with World Vision and just seeing tangibly like how runners could absolutely transform a community, bring clean water to them, extend everyone's life by 10, 20 years just from running a race. And we were like, wow, this is amazing what just running can do, the power of running and coming together. And so we wanted to do more. And so we started our own charity. And thus far, we've been able to fund quite a bit of projects throughout the world, specifically in Africa, building health clinics, doing a lot of microlending. Because really what we've seen from traveling is like people have a desire to work and work their way out of poverty, but they have zero way to have any kind of startup capital or start any kind of business or job. And so I'm giving them a small loan that is 99% of them are repaid and can get reinvested in someone else is a great way for to just continue to have people work their own way out of poverty, provide for their own family. So that's a big thing we're doing right now, as well as there's a really serious drought in Ethiopia right now because of El Nino. And so there's 10 million people without food. So we're providing immediate relief. So it's kind of both the immediate and the long term. You know, you need mm-hmm. both of those kind of hand in hand. And we called it the Halsteps Foundation just because I think a lot of people can feel really apathetic and overwhelmed when it comes to, especially like poverty in Africa. It's like, well, can I make any kind of difference? This is like this massive issue.
Right.
And it's, but really we all need to take our step, like whatever that is, whatever we're capable of doing, like we all have an obligation to do that. And I think being there and seeing it firsthand, like it's like it completely changes you. Like it's totally changed how I view my whole life, like how I spend money, how, like what I decide to do for a job, like everything has changed. And so I hope that's something like everyone can experience at some point. But mm-hmm. but I think our goal was to kind of engage the running community, like let's take a step of some sort. Let's not do anything about these issues.
Well, because it can be so overwhelming. I mean, just like you just, like, you think about the entire problem, you're like, what am I, like, what is one person going to do? And then you kind of get, like, paralyzed and I can't make a big difference, you know?
Yeah, but I think you really have to break it down, and maybe it's child sponsorship. Like, uh-huh. you can sponsor a child for $30 a month. You can provide them, like, adequate nutrition, school fees to go to school, like, hygiene products, like, clean water goes into providing clean water to their community. Like everyone can do $30 a month, no matter like what your budget is, you know, it just, but it may take a little bit of sacrifice. And I think like, I think that's where we're trying to like break it down for people to make it mm-hmm. something that's doable. And maybe it's not giving any money, but it's running a race and engaging your network of family and friends to donate on your behalf.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree with you there. I've been, we sponsor a little girl through Compassion, and I started doing that when I was in college. I was probably like 21, and come on, like, you don't have any money when you're in college.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally get what you're saying, and I think that some people don't do it because they have that mindset, like, I'm just one person, but if you think every single person did it, it just, the world would change. It's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there's some statistic, like if two families in every church in America adopted a child, there would be no more orphans
in
the world
or
something.
In that book, Orphanology.
Yeah. And so you really like, when you break it down like that, it's like, we can do this, you know, we can end poverty in our lifetime. And it's just kind of catching that vision. And so one thing we really try to do too is we have zero overhead with our charity. We're 100% volunteer rents. So I think that's a lot of deterrent for other
huge,
people
yeah.
too, is like, how much of this money is actually going to the mm-hmm. projects, you know? But
oh, that's really good to know.
Yeah, but really I feel like that isn't an excuse to not do anything, you know? Like
right.
you still have to, even if a small percentage is going, like we all need to do something.
Well, yeah, because some of these organizations can't run without a paid employee. So then who do you guys have, like a big board, or how do you run it then?
So I'm doing most of the day-to-day stuff right now in all my free time.
Not busy at all.
Which, you know, we would like to grow the foundation even bigger and do more eventually, which would require paid staff. But at this point, we feel like we want to continue to be 100% volunteer mm-hmm. run. And so, yeah, we're making it work.
So you, I mean, you just run it all out of your house then?
Yeah, right now it's pretty doable. I mean, we aren't doing any of the programming ourselves.
Okay.
We're giving to reputable organizations.
Okay.
So I think where a lot of the staffing comes in is like, if you're implementing something in a developing country, like you better have
right.
your team that uh-huh. knows what they're doing. And I think eventually we would like to move towards that. But at the moment, we're just partnering with people that are doing really good work.
And do you guys build a hospital in Kenya?
We did, yeah. That was really special to partner with Wesley Career around that. And he's a fellow professional runner. And we got to go visit it firsthand. And I'll never forget shaking. I think like 200 people from the community showed up and were just so appreciative. And really it wasn't us. It was, you know, it was partly us, but also these runners through the Chicago Marathon and supporters of Steps that had kind of stepped up to do that. And it's really rewarding when you can see the tangible impact of people's running right there.
So are your girls are from, do you guys specifically do work in Ethiopia too?
We're starting to do more now with our girls. And after spending so much time there the last year, our heart is definitely tied to that country. Uh-huh. But previously, I mean, we've done a lot of work in Mozambique, Kenya, Uganda, different areas of East Africa.
That's so awesome. So, okay, back to running a little bit. I feel like I could talk to you about that forever, that and adoption. Okay, so you're going to try to qualify for the trials, and then you would like to race at the Olympics, right?
Yeah, that would be a dream come true. So we'll see.
So then do you think long term, though? I mean, do you think track long term or do you think marathons long term?
Right now, I would say in marathon. Like, that's really where, like, I felt most passionate in my training and racing, especially, like, in the half marathon distance. I felt like I've had some pretty big breakthroughs and feel like there's more there. So I feel like I have unfinished business there for sure. But who knows? I mean, I've seen people that do marathon training and then all of a sudden they have all this strength on the track and it kind of changes their track career. So
interesting.
I'm kind of leaving anything open to God right now.
That's awesome. You've only done 3 or 4 marathons, haven't you?
Yeah, I've only really, I would say, done 2, like Chicago and London. Like, I had my really, really hot baby that I suffered through and then dropping out of the trials. Uh-huh. So there were pretty only 2 real successful ones.
That you really, really were able to race to your full potential.
Yeah.
Because London was that at like a 2-minute PR?
It was, I would say like, yeah, maybe a little over a minute PR.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite distance to race? Just of everything you've ever done, what is your favorite distance to race?
Well, I would say right now it's probably around like a 10-mile to half marathon distance on the roads.
Oh.
I've always loved road miles in the past, and steeplechases, when they're going well, can be really amazing. They can be really difficult when you're not running well.
Yeah.
So, I would say right now around 10 to half marathon.
And have you been, so you're sponsored by ASICS. Have they been your sponsor from the get-go with your professional running?
They have. It's been really awesome just how they kind of see a long-term and really value athletes, like not just kind of how your last performance was, but really see a value in you as a person and are kind of loyal to you in the long term. So it's been over almost 11 years now with them.
Do you have a lot of friends that are also athletes for them? I mean, is it kind of like a community where you guys have gotten to know each other? And
yeah, it is like a small family now, especially like with the Mammoth Track Club and Dina Castor running that, which we were up there for a long time training there. And we know a lot of people in the office and everything. So it's been awesome.
I have work like very part-time for a local running store, and I ran into our ASICS rep the other day and I was like, I'm interviewing Sarah Hall for my podcast. I'm so excited.
That's awesome.
I felt like he was probably like, calm down. So, okay. I always end with just like fun questions and random stuff. So you guys, I feel like the first thing I ever really knew about you guys is you were known for these like muscle milk pancakes. What's your like secret recipe there?
Yeah. So it's funny because people probably think we're just trying to like plug our sponsors by talking about them all the time, but actually we're like legitimately addicted to these. Like, I wake up and I like bounce out of bed so excited for my super dark chocolate muscle milk pancake, which we make it with like teff flour. So teff is actually an Ethiopian grain. It's only grown there. And it's gluten-free and high in iron. But you don't have to make it with that. You can make it with like any pancake mix or powder. And then we used chocolate muscle milk. And right now I'm using 1/4 cup of cocoa powder, which makes it extremely dark and like gives you a caffeine punch too.
Oh, that's nice.
And yeah, the recipe is online if you just Google like Hall muscle milk pancake. But it's amazing. Like, and our kids are addicted to them now too. And So we legitimately like just love Muscle Milk, and it's been, I feel like it's actually like using it for 11 years now. It's like, I can't imagine my career without it. But yeah, we, you know, it's nice to just be able to represent brands that you really authentically believe in, like, and you really love their product. Unfortunately, you're in a position to just choose those right now.
Yeah. Well, because have you ever been approached by a product where you're like, I'm sorry, I just like, I wouldn't purchase that if you didn't sponsor me, so I can't really jump on with that?
Definitely, all the time. Like, we've really tried to, it's part of that authenticity, you know? Like, just like, money is not worth, like, losing your integrity over, you know?
I feel like you're seeing that everywhere, too, just with, like, the whole social media boom. Yeah. Like, people are pimping out products left and right just to do it, you know?
Yeah, we pretty much get asked every day, like, hey, can we send you a free sample of this? And in exchange, we would, like, like, two or three posts, and it's like, A, that's not really the value, you know? And B, it's like, wow, are people really willing to do that? Like, they're just going to, for, like, a free, you know, protein shake or something.
Yeah. And it might not even be a product that they love.
Right, yeah.
So were you guys using the Teff flour? Like, have you always used that?
We did, yeah. I'm not sure how we knew about it, but even before the girls, like, we've liked that. And so they love it, of course, too.
I'm just wondering. I mean, I'm sure you could get it at, like, well, maybe even Whole Foods. We have a local, you know, like, real hippie organic store here that I'm sure you could get it at.
Yeah, it's surprising. Even Bob's Red Mill brand like carries it in some of the main grocery stores, but we get ours online in like massive bulk.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting that it's high in iron. My husband always struggles with low iron, so I'll have to look into that for sure.
Yeah, that's a great thing. And also oat bran, we try to use a lot of, is pretty high in iron, and cocoa powder. So cocoa powder and the Teff together in that pancake are really high in iron, so that's good.
Okay, I'm going to have to start making Muscle Milk pancakes for breakfast for him.
Yeah.
Well, and we don't eat meat either, so I feel, you know, it's like he's definitely not getting iron from, like, you know, red meat. So yeah. Do you guys, are you, like, super, I mean, you have to be super conscious about your diet when you're hardcore training, right?
Yeah, I think it's just become a lifestyle now where we, you know, we love food and, like, even sugar and stuff, but it's kind of the timing of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I have a sweet tooth, but actually, like, right after a hard workout or a longer workout is a great time to eat sugar. Mm. And it goes, like, to your muscles and goes to recovery. So if I have, like, some sweet treat that I want, I just bring it to my workout with me. And then I don't feel like I'm living constantly deprived, you know? Which I think when you've been doing it this long, like, there's only so long you can be, like, hardcore, like, depriving yourself. So I think we can get away with a lot, too, with how much we're burning, but we definitely, like, we try to eat as close to how God made things as possible, like whole foods and not really processed or artificial things.
Are you finding it crazy that now you have to cook for six people?
Yeah.
Or do you cook, or does Ryan cook?
Well, we weren't sure, like, because they'd only eaten kind of a few things their whole lives, like how picky they would be, and they definitely were at first, but very quickly they've kind of adapted to how we eat. And fortunately, one of our sponsors is Alaska Seafood, which is another, like, not very easy thing to promote, because it's like you can't get much better than that, like, straight from Alaska salmon and stuff. And our girls are, when they, you ask them their favorite things about America, they're like, fish.
Aww.
So we eat fish like six times a week probably, and so yeah, things like that make it easier to be able to have all that for free. And they eat really healthy. They love, like, sautéed kale and lentils and all those things. So we're very strict, too, about, like, we're not making kids' meals and our own meals. Like, we're all eating the same thing. So I think once you set that precedent, it makes it easier.
Oh, my gosh. I struggle with that. I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old. And with the older – well, the one-year-old doesn't really, you know, we don't – mess with his meals with us because he does his own thing still. But with a three-year-old, it's like, it's to the point where we're like, okay, now we need to really set that we are having dinner together and this is what we're eating. And if you don't want to eat it, you don't have to, but, like,
yeah,
you know. And it's hard though, because there are some things where I'm like, well, I don't know, if I was three and I didn't like broccoli, you know, like, you know, what do you do? So it's a struggle for sure.
It is tough. It's tough to let them go hungry, but I think a few times
they're not
going to
starve. Yeah.
then they catch on that, yeah.
Do your girls, I mean, do they share rooms then? Because, I mean, that's a lot of rooms. There's four of them.
Yeah, they actually all took over our master loft, which is pretty big.
Oh,
so
cool. So they're all in there together?
They are. We thought they'd probably, from we heard from other adoptive parents, they might be worried if, you know, they kind of would want to all be together. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really special. So then you guys moved into just, like, guest room or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
So, okay, a couple other questions. Did you read any? I was going to ask you this earlier when I mentioned that I was reading Orphanology again. Did you guys read? Did you read any good like books on adoption or anything like that when you guys were going through that process?
Yeah, one that really impacted me was called "There Is No Me Without You" by Melissa Faye Green, and that it kind of talks about the AIDS crisis in Africa, especially Ethiopia, breaking out and kind of how that affected the orphan crisis, and kind of weaves that into a novel about a local woman that started an orphanage and started kind of adoption for the first time in the country. And so that was really impactful, one of my favorite books I've ever read. And I also really loved Cutting for Stone, which isn't about adoption, but just about Ethiopia, a novel. And just helped me really love that country, like grow to love it. It has a really fascinating history. So both of those are books I really recommend.
Do you ever read books that are just like leisure? I just don't want to think about anything serious.
those are kind of it. I would say novels. I finished a really good one recently called Miracle on Voodoo Mountain about a girl in Haiti doing missions work and ends up adopting kids there and stuff. So, so those are kind of my fun reads, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. In your spare time, do you have any time for shows like TV? Do you guys even have a TV?
We don't have cable. We never have, but not a lot. No, I mean, I try to get in like my prayer and time with God, like before the girls come home is kind of like my one sitting on the couch time.
You do that in the morning or when they're still at school?
It's usually sometime after lunch, actually, because I get up and I'm kind of getting them ready, and then I'm straight into training.
Yeah, and then you come home and you have a little bit of alone time.
Mm-hmm.
So when's your meet that you are, like, going to try to qualify for the trials?
I'm not sure. I'm actually going to touch base with my coach after this call and kind of figure out a plan, see what's out there, and go from there.
That's so great. Well, I am going to be following you along on that, and I'll
Thank
be excited
you.
To see what you're doing.
Thanks a lot.
Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, and I will put a list of all the books and everything we talked about. I'll have show notes for the show. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thanks, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, that was episode 11. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you walk away from the show feeling inspired and encouraged by Sarah. I love how authentic and real she was, and I know she's encouraged me to go do some good in the world. So, thanks for listening, and we'll have our next episode out next Friday as usual. And I will be dropping some hints as to who that will be on my social media. You can follow me at Lindsay Hine on Twitter, and my Instagram is at LindsayHine626. And I also have a Facebook page that is just called Out for a Run. It's just affiliated with my blog, but I'm using that for the podcast as well. So connect with me, and if you have anything you want to talk about from the show, if you have any questions for Sarah or myself, tweet at us, Instagram us, whatever, and I will make sure to get back to you. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful weekend. See you later.